Today on Movie Wallah, so we review Stronger, American Made, and Battle of the Sexes. It's time for Movie Wallah. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Dee as well.
Movie Wallah is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. You love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Greetings.
Hello. So, I think I'm still flustered from the last podcast.
Yes, so for those that may not have caught that last podcast, we reviewed Mother, which I think we could probably fill another podcast easily with conversation. There's so much to say, love it or hate it, that movie is certainly not one that's easy to ignore.
That's perfect.
So, but Rashmi, you mentioned, just to talk further, it hasn't done well in the box office, so that's kind of interesting to see what the award season will make of it, because it's polarizing, as we found.
Yeah. It's gotten the lowest cinema score rating, the F, which I just read only 19 other movies have ever gotten an F rating.
Now, it's done reasonably well on Rotten Tomatoes. I know this isn't the Mother Part 2 podcast, but... Right.
I was just going to say...
What's going on?
The nightmare continues. Like Jennifer Lawrence in the movie. Like, what's going on?
67% Rotten Tomatoes. So it did just creep over the fresh line. But
the audience score is 47.
Yeah.
Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, anyway, we are not here...
Oh, actually, that does remind me. Joe, did you want to mention the thing you found out about Rotten Tomatoes? Remember you said, oh my God, I just realized that.
So it's interesting, actually. It's not a major discovery. Many people may know about this, but oftentimes when you look at the Tomatometer score, and we've commented on this in the past, where it swings wildly, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a movie that's, you know, in the 90%, you go and watch it and it's, you know, maybe above average, but it's not like The Second Coming or some, you know, amazing movie. And one thing that not everyone... And I don't think they...
It's a binomial thing. Go on.
Well, they don't pain themselves to point this out, but the percentage score on Tomatometer is the number of reviews that are positive.
Correct.
And the positive threshold is depending on a score, which, you know, it could be a B+ would, you know, or a B would, you know, end up being positive. So a movie could have... a large number of just above average reviews, but as long as the majority of people think of it as above average, you get a high score and a percentage.
Correct.
If you look underneath the percentage on the Tomatometer page, there is an average rating. And the average rating
is the average of the actual scores.
Which can sometimes, those things don't necessarily align. So you can have a movie that is reviewed as... 100% on the Tomatometer, but it may only have like a 7 out of 10 for the, you know, as an average score. So it's kind of interesting, because every now and then you come across a movie where things just don't add up.
Yeah. Comment came because we have a lot of people who say, well, I'll only go and watch a movie if it's got more than a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
And the truth is that that's great, because if I'm looking at it has scored 85% on the Tomatometer. However, the average rating is only 7.2 out of 10.
Right.
And the only danger with looking at that score in isolation is that it generally hovers between the 6 and the 8. So, you know, there are very few movies that kind of, you know, if you to do a scientific normal distribution curve, right, you're going to get a lot of scores clustered around the 7, and it becomes hard to tell. So just know that there's more to the percent than meets the eye.
Because a lot of people think it's an average of the average rating, that it's the average of all the ratings that the different critics gave, and it's not at all.
Correct.
It's the average of whether it was a binomial yes or no, whether it was favorable or not favorable. So you could have a movie which is, everybody gives it a B, nobody really gives it an A, and it could still have a 100%.
Yeah.
Because every single person said, well, it's more favorable than unfavorable. So you could have a mediocre movie with a very high Tomatometer rating.
Exactly. And that's the thing. That's all we wanted to point out, because I use that score to assess movies too, and it's important to go just a little deeper, because the thing that really irritates me, you know, Rashmi, you mentioned it, is there are now a growing body of you know, people who think of themselves as, you know, movie fans and will only watch movies above a certain score. And I think that's a very it's a very sad state of affairs, because there are some gems that I think have done not so well. And you know, it's not just, you know, we all like the odd movie that, you know, everyone else hates. But I think there are some real gems that somehow, you know, don't get above, you know, a 60 or 70% on the Rotten Tomatometer and are, you know, extremely good movies.
That you might like if you like that type of movie.
Yeah.
But so, you wouldn't give it a chance.
So don't rely on it in its entirety. I would say find a reviewer that you like, such as Joe or Rashmi or Yazdi. And, you know, I think there's a huge value in kind of looking and reading reviews, as you know, we would be biased about that. But I think, yeah, I have my own favorite reviewers who I tend to align with. And I think, you know, that's more important perhaps than these aggregate scores.
Yeah. And therein finish our public service announcement.
Yes. Our service to you, the listeners.
Yes.
Yes.
And we have three movies to discuss today.
We do indeed, yes. Stronger, American Made, and Battle of the Sexes. So we're going to skip our...
And they're all biopics. You forgot the...
Every one of them, yes.
Yes. That's interesting. I didn't catch that until yesterday. You mentioned it ahead of time.
Great observation by our esteemed Yazdi.
So we're not. Well, we're going to skip. We're going to skip our Netflix. I can't find anything to watch on Netflix. I think we're not doing that too much right now, because I think the podcasts tend to be quite dense already. So, you know, we're saying get out to the movies. But if you do have a Netflix subscription, there's plenty to find. All right, let's start then with where should we start?
Stronger.
Should we do them in the order we said?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the podcast. Yeah. So okay. So Stronger is. My introduction, and I'll be very brief here. This is the quote-unquote inspirational and heroic true life story of Jeff Bauman, the man whose iconic photo from the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing captured the hearts of the world. It's based on Bauman's New York Times best-selling book and was co-authored with Brett Witter. The movie is directed by David Gordon Green and written by John Polono. That's the screenplay piece of it. The cast is, of course, Jake Gyllenhaal in the main lead, with support from Miranda Richardson, Tatiana Maslany, Frankie Shaw, Clancy Brown. So, guys, what did you think of Stronger?
It's going to be on my top 10 list. It's one of my favorite films. I cried and cried and cried. It really got to me. Completely bypasses the tropes of a biopic. It doesn't even feel like a biopic. This is how you do it. It's a masterclass on how to do a movie based on a real event. Perfect for me. I loved it.
I think it's too early to make a movie about an event that only happened in the last few years, and especially when it doesn't have anything new to say about a character who has to overcome extreme adversity. I think this had incredible acting, but it didn't do anything for me.
Wow. And I'm going to be in the middle, as
it's
always.
It's weird. I think I'm like...
Yeah, Rashmi's having a good time at the movie.
Yeah. I hate it.
She butchered Mother and Kingsman from the last podcast. Hopefully she'll like one of the three movies this week.
No.
Otherwise we're going to have to forcibly remove you from the podcast.
Yeah.
You do this because you love movies.
What's going on, Rashmi? I don't know.
You know... This is a very well executed movie. I think it's carried very much by Gyllenhaal's performance, which is, I'm not familiar with the source material per se, but I do like the fact that the movie explores post-traumatic stress disorder in a way that has been done before. But there's a very personal connection here. I think it's very honest about the realities of somebody who was injured in this unfair and random way might feel. And I think it's you know, very well performed by not just Gyllenhaal, but the surrounding cast. And, you know, again, I think the beauty of this movie lies in its honesty and its truth, and the portrayal of somebody that is generally perceived by the public to be this hero who feels that he's not done anything heroic and actually struggles with the fact that he was a victim here.
Yeah, I think this movie could have been completely, you know, Hallmark movie of the week. It should have been the Hallmark movie of the week.
And in some ways it is still, I mean.
But I think what it really brings to the fore is, you know, this person who, and the best thing this movie does is it does not put this person on a pedestal. And it's probably based on, you know, the original material. And this is a very simple man who is deeply, deeply flawed. And he has kind of this greatness thrust upon him in spite of his, you know, he just happened to be at a place and a horribly tragic thing happened to him and the world considered him a hero. And he's barely coming to grips with what has happened to him, which is life-altering. If anything in the world can be life-altering, I can't think of what more can be life-altering than losing both of your legs. And then for him to kind of find his center back again, you know, and not make it seem cheesy or cheap or overly pat. There's nothing glib about this movie. Jake Gyllenhaal's character in this movie earns every little bit of, you know, redemption he gets or you know, every little bit of, you know, learning that he gets out of it. And I love that it speaks to people who suddenly become very famous or suddenly become, you know, suddenly are put into the public eye. And you would think,
For nothing they actually did.
And you would say, oh yeah, first world problems. But when you look at this character, maybe it's Gyllenhaal's performance or maybe David Gordon Green, who is a brilliant director. But this stopped for me. It could have been about anything. It's like after the first 15 minutes, it stopped being about the Boston Marathon situation.
Yeah.
And it became about this one person trying to recover from something terrible. And the best movies for me are about recovery. I mean, Room was about it and Short Term 12 was about it. And this kind of, for me, joins the pantheon of those movies which talk about something horrible has happened to you. How are you going to deal with that? And most people deal with it extremely poorly. And he deals with it extremely poorly. And ultimately, it's the little things. It's the love of somebody who insists against your wishes to be there. A tender help from family members who are toxic but still ridiculously supportive of you. These are the things which ultimately make you, you know, find yourself again. And even as I'm saying this, this sounds horribly corny, but it's done so authentically. I mean, I've seen people who have, they go through knee replacement surgery and, you know, they just don't have the will anymore to go through rehab. And think of that, you know, exponentially increased. I mean, there's this great scene where the people at the rehab center keep telling him, if you don't show up here regularly, you know, we can't help you. And I felt his pain. I could feel why I wouldn't want to go there, you know, after everything that's happened to him.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's not just Gyllenhaal. I'll stop in just a second, but I think it's Tatiana Maslany who plays his girlfriend. I mean, the two of them are in top form here, and she's the heart of the movie. Yeah, she's the heart of the movie. If he raises the game, she's there with him all along, and they two form this really complicated, contrary, complex couple, which are entirely, they're so believable because they're so human. I just love this movie.
See, I don't disagree with anything you said, Yazdi. Honestly, I agree with everything you said, but I didn't connect with it emotionally. Mm. I just couldn't, it didn't get under my skin and devastate me. And, you know, these sort of films should, I think. And clearly it did for
it
you.
Did.
For some reason I saw him, and I think this is the genius of the movie. Like, I don't have to love the movie to appreciate the fact that the genius of the movie is that he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the way he behaves is like jerk-like. And like you said, his family are jerks and the people around him are jerks. And that's the genius. He's human. And yet, like you said, there's all this stuff bestowed upon him that he doesn't want. But it didn't have the emotional connection for me.
That to me is the deftness of the movie. I think it would have been very easy to make this a manipulative movie that,
the Hallmark movie that
begs, begs you to, you know, oh, look, cry for this poor, wonderful man that did, you know, that had this horrible thing happen to it. And look, he's a regular guy. He's like you or me. He's not a wonderful guy. He's got his own hopes, thoughts, and dreams that are cruelly snatched from him. And I think the humanity of it, yes, you mentioned that word, of not just him, but his girlfriend, who kind of gets sucked into it too, because she wasn't even his girlfriend. I mean, I hope this is not too spoiler territory.
No, I think this is, this is public.
He had a crush on her, but it was not reciprocated. And suddenly, because of this event, the movie, you know, does a very good job of showing how she was pulled in to a situation, and it was nothing but the goodness in her heart that you know, that it would be very easy for her to walk away. So I think, you know, again, I think that the movie does a really fine job of not manipulating us as an audience, but rather allowing us to see it for what it is. And, you know, your own response, your own emotional response to it may come from the fact that, you know, it's genuinely trying to portray reality, right? This is how it is, and life isn't, you know, letters from the president, and, you know, you're so, I mean, these things don't really ultimately help, you know, going out on the ice to, they're not, this is what we want from them. You know, it doesn't help them. You know, we want to stand up and say, you know, look, what a great American soul this man is for overcoming this tragedy. But really we're taking from them, not giving.
Now, there's some incredible scenes in this movie, which, again, I don't... It's based on a book that this person wrote, the real-life character. So I don't know how much is...
Jeff Bowman, yeah.
Jeff Bowman, how much is it? How much is from the book versus, you know, what was made. But there's this great... You know, he's just gone and made this appearance at this huge sporting event, and he's waved the flag, and, you know, it's causing him a lot of PTSD. And he's really kind of freaking out, and, you know, she kind of very wisely decides that that's enough, and she kind of pulls him back and takes him quickly away from this audience of millions. And he's going up in the elevator. They're going up in the elevator, and he kind of has a breakdown in the elevator, and he screams at her saying, "Don't touch me, leave me, leave me, leave me." And he's unbearably cruel to her, and she won't leave him. And that, to me, is the stuff of families. That, to me, that's where I started crying, because I was like, most people would be like, you know, F you, you know, I've been sucked into this nightmare because of you. I'm here with you. I'm doing all this. I've gone against my family. I'm here to stand beside you. And if you're going to yell at me and be cruel to me, but she stands by him.
But she does have those moments too. And that's,
she does. And then she's no saint either. She's absolutely not a saint, but she, at that point, those two characters became so real to me.
Right.
There's another one where they have a fight in a car where they're just screaming at each other. And that, to me, was like a perfect, you know, a little clip that you show after somebody's name is called out for an Oscar nomination for both of them. So
can we talk about that?
Yeah, we should.
Because I think that's going to happen here.
I hope so.
Both performances here are remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. And I keep thinking, why am I not connecting with it emotionally? And I can tell you a reason, and this is a bit of a shout out to someone I know personally. So a wonderful lady who I met through Pilates, she's actually a Pilates teacher called Laura Brown. Recently, her husband, who's a Navy SEAL, and has done missions abroad, had an accident 200 days ago, and he has had severe brain injury. And she's been posting on Facebook, and she's been picked up by lots of magazines because this is an amazing story. And I think what's happening is that as we were watching the movie, this is kind of in my brain, because I know someone who's going through this personally, and it's really tragic. And I think that although, like you said, Yazdi, that a lot of the pain of the adversity is kind of covered, the true tragedy of it is not in some way. I think that's the piece that's missing for me.
I can see
that. And I think that's why I'm connecting. I've just got this up on my Facebook page now. But as I watch, you know, this couple who have been married for 5 years struggling with, you know, someone who was just in an unfortunate car accident, who had no hope of living, same as the situation. I just don't feel the enormity of the situation. So I think that's just my disclaimer for why this.
Sure.
This hasn't.
Because you have something closer to you that's very much more real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, the movie doesn't dwell very much on the events and the politics around the bombing itself. I think, you know, the bombing is depicted at some point, but the...
Yeah, and I wonder if that's maybe what would have elevated it in some way for me, but...
I see the movie's treatment of the material... And like you said, deft is the right word. Very similar to how Loving kind of handled it last year, remember?
Yes.
It's very hands-off. It doesn't want to sensationalize it. It doesn't want to kind of, you know, pull you into the emotionality. It almost keeps a little bit of a distance. And it's very hard to decide how close you want to get, you know? Yes. Because then you don't want to be accused of being, you know, kind of milking it for getting audiences, you know... sympathies. And I also thought Miranda Richardson, who plays this British actor, who plays his mom with this amazing Boston accent.
I think best supporting.
She's so good here. I would happily... Because she's like the worst mom and she's the best mom. There have been a lot of movies like this year, but she is... You can see how she's completely wrong, but yet she's there for him. She's his mom. She's just there, as wrong as she is.
But she's flawed.
Which mother is not flawed? I mean, it's just
right.
You know, it's I don't know.
She's again the strength in the performance is to show you both sides because she's far from perfect, but she's trying
so far.
Mm-hmm. Right, but she's trying in the only way that she knows how. It's just you know,
yeah.
Like many people, you can't suddenly expect them to be Disney mom,
yeah,
because you know the son was involved in something horrific,
yeah. And I think that dynamic between, you know, a potential daughter-in-law or son's girlfriend, partner, wife was very well captured.
Again, she was trying to protect her son from
being
what would
hurt.
Be the pain of somebody who most people would walk away.
Yeah.
Should we wrap this one up?
Yeah. I mean, I also like that. Well, look at the poster for the movie. It's about, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal with artificial legs, you know, trying to get on his exercise thing. I think most people expect this movie to be about the physical transformation that this man had to go through after he lost his legs.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie doesn't have a lot of interest in that. It actually has more of an interest in his emotional transformation and how he kind of learned to kind of find himself. And I think that might be a little... off-putting to people who are probably more interested in the more traditional story about the bombing and, you know,
right.
And so forth. So
yeah. And it was filmed incredibly, rather like when we spoke about Logan Lucky and Adam Driver's fake arm.
Right.
I don't know how they did this. And I kept looking, but I couldn't tell if it was green screen or...
must be CGI.
As a testament to the movie, I didn't believe it was anything other than... Jake Gyllenhaal with no legs, right? I wasn't trying to figure it out at all.
And not to harp on the same thing over and over again, but we've been talking about Gyllenhaal for 4 years now, you know, about him deserving an Oscar nomination with Nightcrawler and with, you know, he is very different physically. His face looks different.
Yeah.
His hair is different. He's lost a lot of weight. You know, he's skinny. You know, there's...
He's a great actor.
And he's... When is he going to get his due? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he's
Eddie
got Redmayne his best supporting.
Got an Oscar.
Right? Yeah, for Brokeback Mountain.
No, but he didn't win it.
I thought he did.
I don't think so.
Well, Google will sort that out for us.
But maybe, if he did, then yeah.
Yeah, because he is...
He's sensational.
He is the movie.
He is great.
Yeah.
And so your score?
You know, it's a little bit of an Oscar vehicle. I mean, you know, we talk about this a lot, right? This is the kind of movie that actors, it's a gift, right? You have this very sympathetic role. But at the same time, you also have to deliver the goods, right? I don't know that a lesser actor could have pulled out an Oscar-winning performance here. So you know you got to kind of give him his dues for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, he was nominated. He didn't win.
Okay,
but you know, I mean, we all like to think that we are all cerebral and intellectual when we discuss these movies and so forth. But at the end of the day, I respect those movies which just break me down and just get to me emotionally. And maybe it's where I am right now, but this just movie did really break me down. It just crumbled me. For the last 1 hour of the movie, I was just like tears were constantly running down my
face.
Was
it like when I was in the Glass Castle?
And more than that, I think. So I'm going to give it the rare
9. Did you honk?
No, I didn't honk.
Okay.
But I'm going to give it the rare 9 out of 10. It really got to me. And I think it's just, it's like a masterclass on how you should do a biopic, I think. It just completely bypasses all the tropes, I think. At the point where the context becomes irrelevant. You're just invested in this person.
See, now it becomes a good podcast because we've got two other biopics.
Yes.
So moving us along.
Yes.
For me, this was just okay. It's not a bad movie. I think the performances are incredible. Miranda Richardson, Tatiana
Maslany,
Jake Gyllenhaal, really good performances, but the movie didn't deliver as a whole. Although I kind of admire what it was trying to do, I just think it's too early for a movie like this about this event. 5 out of 10.
Oh,
yes, he honked.
Oh my god, 5? Really? Okay,
Joe.
And like I said, right in the middle of you guys, so I'm going to give it, it lands on a 7 for me because I admired it more than I loved it. And I think, you know, again, I think the movie's lack of manipulation is very, very nicely done. But as a result, it didn't hit me emotionally.
Yeah.
So, you know, I come from a place of admiration rather than love. I think it's a very important story. I think it's important for us to understand and look at, you know, people to whom we look, you know, because of their involvement and as victims in this type of thing. But honestly, it was a movie that I think is a tour de force for actors, but not one that will stay with me or go anywhere near my list by the end of the year, for sure. Okay. So, we have two more movies to talk about, American Maid and Battle of the Sexes, and yeah, both biopics indeed. So, where would you like to go next?
American Maid.
Okay, so Rashmi, are you introducing that one?
Yeah, I am. So, this is directed by Doug Lindman and written by Gary Spinelli, and American Maid tells the story of a pilot who lands work for the CIA and as a drug runner in the South during the 1980s. So this tells the story of the a famous drug cartel that came, Pablo Escobar and his friends, that actually was a result of the American government, hence American Made. And this stars Tom Cruise, Domhnall Gleeson, Sarah Wright, Jesse Plemons, Caleb Landry-Jones, a whole Lola Kirk makes an appearance here. A big, big cast, and it's doing very well at the box office at the moment. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really pleased to hear that. So Doug Liman made one of my favorite movies of the last few years, which was Edge of Tomorrow.
So good.
As well with Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. And there's something about the energy that this film has that... that worked fantastically well for me. I thought this was brilliant. It's playful. Its tone is not overly heavy. There's some really, really genuinely funny and tense and scary moments. I think Cruise is a revelation here. We haven't seen him, you know, do this for a while. It's not a very complimentary physical role for someone like Tom Cruise, but, I loved it. I thought this movie was great.
Yes, D.
Yeah, I hated Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not a fan of American Hustle. Everybody loved Catch Me If You Can. I was like, eh. I think this is the movie that all three of those movies should have been.
Bingo, you got your name.
Absolutely. This is how The Wolf of Wall Street should have been. This is how American Hustle should have been. This is how Catch Me If You Can should have been. I love this movie as well. I really like Doug Liman. has a way with piecing this whole story together. Yes. And there's a very deliberate, jaunty, loose-limbed approach to making the whole movie, which only looks jaunty and loose-limbed. It's actually very, very adroitly put together and stitched together. Maybe it does a disservice by making this character more lovable, and all those other movies kind of fall into that trap. But compared to those other movies, I think this one doesn't commit that sin as to the same extent. But it just makes for such a fun ride. Yes. I didn't expect this movie to be... First of all, I didn't know this was made by Doug...
Lyman.
Yeah. And so I was like, wow, this movie is really well made. Oh, this movie is really well made. And then I'm like, I'm laughing. I had a smile on my face through the entire 2 hours of the movie. And this is not exactly Disney material. This gets to dark places. But there's so much creativity and a high energy about this that it completely won me over. I just settled back in my seat like, oh, I'm good. It's so good to watch a movie that's well made and that you can enjoy.
So can this break?
I don't know what's going on. Uh-oh. I don't know. Okay, so I kind of felt a little bit like you two. I felt a little euphoric coming out of the cinema, although I didn't find myself laughing as much as I heard the two of you laughing. For me, this was The Wolf of Wall Street meets War Dogs. I think, frankly, I'm a little frustrated of making light of some real mistakes that have been made by governments that have impacted people's lives. That's what really frustrates me about the movie. So I can enjoy it in the moment. I wish it wasn't based on a true story. Because if it's based on a true story, then we've got a lot to worry about. Now, maybe I am a victim of listening to Serial. episode, the second mm-hmm. series.
So that's the podcast by Sarah Koenig.
Yeah, of This American Life on NPR. And so I'm kind of like, you know, I am probably the conspiracy theorist amongst the three of us. And, you know, my head is full of kind of like stuff that's in that podcast, which is brilliant, by the way. But this isn't Podcast Walla, this is Movie Wallas. I think this is an important story, and I like the way it's put together, and I think it's kind of fun in the way that they almost have this documentary animation in the middle that kind of tells you a bit about the situation, but it doesn't get heavy in like docudrama territory. Right. It keeps it light, which I really enjoyed. I'm just really frustrated about the fact that we're treating these important stories with so much lightness.
But I don't think it's about those stories. I think it's about the man and his role in them. So... if you think about the situations that he was, that he in, you know, but number one, he engineered this to start with. Mm-hmm. And then you think about the way that he was then used as a pawn and the ridiculousness of it all. You kind of have to look at it from that perspective because you're right, Rashmi, it's not taking the consequences of many of those actions into account, right? So like, here's what happened. Here's what the government kind of did. Mm-hmm. And this was this one man's bizarre role in it all. When you think about it, it's insane. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and to think that this is based on, I think as the movie said, based on a true lie, but it is, you know, that's his tagline. Yeah. You can see that they're really exploring the ridiculousness of the situation from one particular man's perspective, and they place him at the core of that. So I think you wanted to see a different movie as opposed to the, you know, that's my only take in that. I agree with you in many ways. What was the movie we saw earlier this year that we all came away with and we said we wanted to see the documentary of it rather than the actual movie? Gold, I think. Yeah, the Matthew McConaughey movie.
Yeah.
So that's exactly the kind of movie, if you play it too seriously, it just gets so weighed down. This movie was so heavy-handed.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I think that irritated me about this is Sarah Wright, who plays Lucy Seale, his wife, is so Margot Robbie light.
I liked her.
Yeah, I liked her too, but I'm tired of like these older men with these, you know, it kind of felt like it bought some smut with it. And I sound like the Puritan at the minute, don't I? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Have you been watching Fox News? I don't know.
Yeah, what's going on? Did you come from a Trump rally?
We should stop this podcast right now.
I'm going to end up on some list.
And put your America, Make America Great Hat Again away. I don't know. It just irritated me. It's one of those ones I think it's an important story. I like the way it was told. I like the way it was filmed. But it just, like, irritated me. I don't know what else to say. It just like she was so Margot Robbie like.
Yeah,
I think it just didn't. And that's why I think we keep saying The Wolf of Wall Street, right? Because it's very similar in tone, and that's one of the pieces that make it very similar for me.
I, like Rashmi, draw a lot of parallels between the two movies, both of which I liked very much yesterday. And you felt very, very differently about the Scorsese movie, but it has that kind of. You know, when you look back on some of these events, you know, War Dogs, brilliant, you know, reference one of you made, Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, it when you look back on, like, these things continue to happen, right, as time goes on, that our governments get involved in things that are essentially, you know, huge plays and have huge implications, and they involve individuals in ways that we can't conceive. Like, the fact that this happened, that this man was used in all of these political manipulations within Central America, you know, following, essentially being given orders from, you know, black ops type CIA characters, you know, the danger that he put himself in order to do that. And the fact that our government money is used in these bizarre, like off the books type ways. You know, we pay taxes, right? To think that our taxes were used to run guns into Nicaragua is you know,
it's horrendous to me. It's horrendous, especially.
But there's a bizarreness to it all. That I think if you.
You can't think about it too much, right?
Exactly.
Because the thing is, given the current, and maybe it's a case of given what the current political climate is in this country today, when certain things can't get funded and yet we're funding these other things, just makes me angry. It makes me angry that we do all of this stuff, but we can't do this stuff. But, you know, that's what democracies are, I guess. So, you know, this isn't a political podcast. I'm just kind of frustrated that year after year we get these very light, whimsical dramas that I feel like if we keep saying this is great movie making, something diminishes the responsibility of doing the right thing. And I don't know if we do the right thing.
Yeah, but it's not the movie's responsibility to fix what were clearly egregious missteps, you know, made on the part of these governments. All it can do is reflect it. Now, I agree with the tone. This one is really having a fun. It's kind of jaunty and it's kind of, you know, kind of drunk on the ridiculousness of the whole situation.
Yeah.
But for me, it was amazing that if somebody had written this as fiction, we wouldn't believe it.
Correct.
We just would not believe it.
Correct.
But the fact that somebody actually played multiple government, and not just the governments, but their secret services, you know, and kind of worked with multiple governments simultaneously and kept things balanced. And I find it fascinating that somebody made so much money at one point that he literally didn't have the space to keep the money. I mean, he didn't have room in his house to keep the money.
Right.
They manufactured banks for him, just right?
So that to me is so fascinating. And I think, to the director's credit, the way it ends and how the story kind of reads out kind of gives, you know, kind of gives conclusion to, you know, this is the price you might have to pay for playing with the people you play with, you know. And so, I don't know. I mean, the other option is to make documentaries, but then
no one will watch it.
So, I don't know. At some point, it just, for me, it wasn't even about the real world. It was just like,
What a ludicrous story.
That this actually happened.
Yes.
And the energy of the filmmaking really just got me going. And Tom Cruise, you know, I mean, he's always been like a little bit too cocky, like coasting on his charms with maybe, you know, 20% smarminess built in. That's his whole package. That's his whole persona. And it's seldom been put to as good of a use as in the service of this character.
He was great. I mean, no fault on
and
Cruise.
We always say Cruise, even in this worst movies, never phones it in. He is there. He's present.
Correct.
He gives it 100%. And, you know, this is why, you know, there's crazy stuff happening in his real life, but people pay up money to watch him on the screen because he comes with some guarantee of quality,
mm-hmm.
in spite of the Mummy reboot last year, which we'll forget about earlier this year.
Did you watch it?
No. Yeah.
All right.
So.
Entertaining. I wish it wasn't real, and I wish that we could tell these important stories without them being so jaunty. 6 out of 10.
8 out of 10 for me. I just love the energy of the movie. I loved, you know, that it doesn't have a false note. It's just structured so nicely together. There's some really good editing here.
Yes.
The way different stories are kind of happening at the same time. It's funny, and not in a ha-ha funny way, but funny in a, like, can you believe the incredulity of this situation?
Yeah.
Can you believe people actually did this? So I think you can't get too moralistic or too judgmental. You just have to almost see it for the absurdity it is. And from that perspective, I really enjoyed it. So 8 out of 10.
See, Joe, this is what happens when you stop me watching Real Housewives. Can I just say, I'm trying to like measure the correlation between my movie scores and watching crappy TV.
Well, you were watching Flipping Out yesterday with the Queen of Versailles on it. So
we might have better scores next podcast.
We're not at the woods yet.
Bring back the old Rush Me.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this movie. I mean, I'm struggling to not give it a 9 because I think it was so fabulously mm-hmm. entertaining. It really was. And it, unlike Rashmi, who's kind of the 20th century history junkie of maybe the
yes.
three of us, you know, I only have a cursory knowledge of some of this stuff. I've never really, you know, read about it. And, It was actually quite enlightening to me. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, my first response getting home was to Google Barry Clear and to Google all
Barry
of the whole,
Seal.
Barry Seal, Barry Clear. Barry Seal. How did I do that? But yeah, and all of the things that he was involved in.
I bet you didn't like Tom Cruise.
There's an extensive, Wikipedia, aspect of all of the stories and the Iran-Contra stuff and the Reagan presidency. I mean, you know, but yeah, Doug Liman brings terrific energy to the last couple of movies that he's made. And you know, the pairing of him and Cruise is magic for me. So I'm going to give it an 8, which is a stingy 8 because I do, unlike you, like you with the last movie, this is going to be one of my favorites of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on then, we have Battle of the Sexes. So, is that you, Yesti?
That's
me. Tell us about this?
Allow me to introduce it. So, directors Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris burst onto the independent movie scene several years ago with their movie Little Miss Sunshine, which was celebrated, was nominated for many Oscars, and, you know.
Which I love.
Everybody loves. I don't know if anybody who does not like Little Miss Sunshine. Since then, they have made another movie called Ruby Sparks, which I also
liked.
Very cute movie.
That was lovely, yeah.
Lovely movie.
Dark.
Yes, yes. Sort of uncelebrated. People should go check out Ruby Sparks. But here they are again, this time making, I think, their first quote-unquote biopic movie. And this is based on an event which happened 44 years ago. And it relates to women's tennis, women's professional tennis, where essentially women's tennis players were not paid equivalent to the men's, and not even close to being equivalent. They were paid about an eighth of the men's salaries, and so they essentially went on strike. And Billie Jean King was, you know, kind of at the head of that whole movement, trying to get, you know, some semblance of equality between men and women's professional tennis. And at that time, almost against her wishes, she got pushed into having a very public, very commercial, very well watched. It was televised. Some believe it's the most watched tennis event ever on television, with Bobby Riggs, who was a much older tennis player who was challenging you know, women to have a match against him to prove that women were inferior to men when it came to the sport of tennis. And the movie kind of relays that whole story from the perspective of both Billie Jean King as well as Bobby Riggs. Like I said, the film is directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. It's written by Britisher Simon Beaufoy. And the movie stars Emma Stone as Billie Jean King and Steve Carell as Bobby Riggs, with a really good supporting cast, which is rounded up by Andrea Riseborough, Bill Pullman, Sarah Silverman, Alan Cumming, and Elizabeth Shue.
And we just have to mention, Simon Beaufoy here has the most impressive resume of anyone yes. involved here. I mean,
Slumdog.
The Full Monty, Slumdog Millionaire, 127 Hours, Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, the recent Everest movie, which I thought was terrific. So, you know, he's I bring that only, and he worked with Danny Boyle a lot, I think, mm-hmm. as well. So, trained.
And I think Danny Boyle had something to do with this movie too.
I think he produced it.
He's producing,
yes. Beaufoy is the one I really want to shout out here. So,
yes. So, what do you guys think about this? This movie kind of was playing for a while in the festival circuit, and
so here it is. Rashmi, will this break your serve of? Your streak of movies that you're not enjoying.
This was just shy of good for me.
No.
Come on, rush me.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, let me tell you why.
I'm going to get you some counselling or something, right?
Bravo comes back in the household.
The joy of the movies has left. Yeah,
you have Sling and there's no Bravo. Are you pining away? Are you withering away?
It's
without
true.
Bravo?
It's true. I made her cancel cable, so I think maybe I'm going to like.
Look what you've made of her.
I've been reading lots of like really interesting historical stuff.
I cancelled cable and got her subscription to the New York Times, and look what's happened.
Look what happened. Yeah, I've turned into Yasti.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Okay, look, this was just shy of good. That doesn't mean it wasn't interesting to watch. It has the makings of a required movie. I'm calling it required. This is really important. Exploring sexual and gender equality. But it didn't have depth or bravery to go there. And that's its failing. I did like it. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying it's shy of good because it didn't want to go there.
So, you know, I like this movie for two reasons. One, I think I called out Beaufoy intentionally because I think it's brilliantly written. This is a really well assembled telling of this story, right? They bring in a lot of various issues as well. It's not just the gender equality, but there is, you know, sexuality, mm-hmm. and there are some, you know, biopic type aspects of you know, both of the characters involved in this movie. So I think it's incredibly well constructed. It's also incredibly well acted. And I think overall that puts together a sufficient package of movie enjoyment for me. Do I think it's brilliant? Do I think it's a movie that's going to stay with me for a long time? Probably not. But it's a very, very good time at the movies. And I actually didn't know the story. So as with many sports movies, you know, the kind of the battle moments of the movies, the tennis games were like edge of the seat stuff for me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the whole movie is leading up to this event, which is this giant gimmick where this older man kind of, you know, is trying to prove that women are not as good as he is, and he challenges them to a very, very public humiliation for either one of them. And this whole gimmick is so cheesy, and you know, she comes in, you know, like on a Cleopatra kind of
throne,
and then he comes in with this giant lollipop and he hands it over. So you know, it's kind of a very kind of a period in time speaking to the sexual and moral, you know, mores of that time. So you think the movie would kind of get caught in this, but it does not. The movie is kind of more than that gimmick. And I think it, the way it speaks to the characters surrounding them, the way it speaks to his wife, Elizabeth Shue, who we don't nearly see enough in movies. And she runs away with a small role. And the way we see Billie Jean King, who is married to this man who we underestimate, and who, look how that whole relationship between her and her possible female lover and her husband is handled. I mean, it sounds scandalous even as I'm saying it, but the movie treats it not with kid gloves. It treats them all with honesty, but there is no judgment. And so this is why a good script is important, because somebody else would have made this so tawdry and would have taken sides and would have made this heavy-handed. But it does not do any of that. And I think it's ridiculous. It's entirely ridiculous that 44 years after this thing happened, right now in 2017, we are still talking about, you know, equality.
Sexual
equality, especially equality in payment. Now, I understand that certain sports are inherently more attended by male audience members than female audience. I understand that, but there shouldn't be an eightfold, disparity between that. So it's somehow so topical to what's happening right now, mm-hmm. even though this happened, 44 years ago. And it gives you a sense for how little we have progressed. We may have iPhones and stuff, but in terms of how we interact with each other and how we place each other into context, we haven't really made a lot of progress. So it's kind of a little bit saddening from that perspective. I also think, I was one of these people who held a lot of, maybe contempt is too strong a word, but certainly disappointment that Emma Stone stole the Oscar last year from
Elizabeth Huppert.
Thank you, Elizabeth Huppert.
Yes.
But this is kind of her victory lap. And for me, at least, she convinces everybody that that one wasn't a fluke. Okay, that she can, this is a difficult role. And as far as I can see, that's her playing tennis, even if it's being recreated. I think she did an incredible job. And, the movie has the good sense, and I'm sorry I've been talking nonstop, but the movie has the good sense to kind of see the Bobby Riggs character for who he is, that he, in his heart of hearts, probably is not as misogynistic. He probably doesn't really think, or maybe he does, but for him, it's just he knows that by saying that, it's going to push the right buttons and it's going to get people to turn in and watch the television shows.
Yeah.
And she even says that at one point that, he's a clown, I don't care about him, but I care about how the world perceives, me and the state of tennis and the state of women's tennis. So it's kind of larger than what's at stake here.
Yeah, and I think it smartly therefore defines for us the relationship he has with his wife, who clearly is the wearer of the pants in that mm-hmm. household, right? That I think is clever. Here's the problem I had with it. I'm going to disagree with you, Yazdi, on Emma Stone's performance. For me, this was tonally inconsistent because it's funny with the Steve Carell parts and it makes light of all of that. And I know that it's trying to paint him as a buffoon, but then it really wanted to be serious around Billie Jean's relationships. And all of her relationships. But think about the tenderness of the relationships we get to watch in a movie like Carol or even Blue is the Warmest Color. They're very genuine and authentic and organic, it feels like. This to me felt like play acting.
Really?
This was, totally. I could not buy the sexual chemistry or tension between Andrea Riseborough and Emma Stone at all. And for me, that's where it failed. Like, I think that she did a good job of portraying Billie Jean King, but she was almost... And again, maybe this is a fault of the movie in the sense that I felt like it wanted to go there, but it didn't quite let go. It should have let go a bit more. It should have opened up a little bit more. Metaphorically.
I hope.
That's interesting you say that. I didn't get that at all. I mean, I think it did show that there was an intensity of their relationship that couldn't emerge because of the circumstances and the times. I mean, I think if we had had like a Carol / Blue is the Warmest type moment, it would have probably been, this was a very covert thing, right? They couldn't be openly, In fact, Billie Jean King had to deliberately cool it. She obviously had very strong emotions for the other character, but I don't know. I think it handled that really well because I think I wasn't expecting to have like this huge romance. This was just something that she knew couldn't happen. Right? The time wasn't right for that to happen.
And yet,
in spite of that, she was really struggling to deny it.
Yeah, and I'm not talking Joe about bedroom having stuff. A moment, yeah, right. with a bedroom scene, no, right? No, because there is one no. in there, right? But it just it's about the authenticity of how the relationship is handled, and it just felt it just didn't feel authentic to me in the way that it's portrayed. Especially on the Emma Stone part. I thought Andrea Riseborough did a very good job. But it just, that's the piece that didn't work for me. It didn't feel tonally consistent because it was hyper serious. It was trying to be hyper serious. And then it would kind of switch to this kind of zany character for me.
I saw the movie as being very openly in favor of Billie Jean King, that it's her story. Even totally. Though it's called Battle of the Sexes. So it's her story, and he happens to be
a big part of it.
Right, a side character in it. So I think from that perspective, I didn't have any problem with the movie paying more attention to her and her own relationships. And within the orbit of where she was, this person came off as a buffoon, and he was doing these crazy things on television, you know, where he would, you know, tie his hand to a dog, and with the other hand, he would play tennis and all this stuff. So he did. I mean, this was not made up. This is how he was. So I didn't find the tone as jaunting. But I, you know, in the screening we went, somebody had brought kids to the movie, and I was convinced this was an R-rated movie.
Me too. I was because
of the intensity of the relationship that is portrayed between, you know, Billie Jean King and her hairdresser, played by Andrea Riseborough. So for me, the fact that I felt, I mean, those kids rightly should have been there because it's PG-13. But still, I thought the movie got pretty intense in terms of depicting their personality. So, depicting their relationship. So, I didn't find it inauthentic. I just found it as, it gave me a sense of how dangerous it was for her, especially for her being at the top of her game at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
And her husband says at one point that we are fools to think that she cares about either one of us. What she cares about is her game. That's the only thing which matters. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, your response to this stuff is really interesting, Rashmi, because, you know, I think, you know, I'm not trying to discount the points you make. It's just the movie had a very different effect on you than it did. Yes, you're right. No, that's
Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah. Is it the male female thing? I don't know. Yes, you know, I seem to be in lockstep at the moment with the things that we're liking.
Yeah, so. I think I better get my subscription to Vogue back.
Yeah, well,
or Entertainment Weekly. Or something.
Yeah, I think so, or Us Weekly or something. I do want to give kudos to Sarah Silverman though. I think she was incredible in this movie.
Yes. I forgot about
a wonderful performance. And I don't usually like Sarah Silverman because I feel like she overacts, but I feel like this was made for her. I would consider her for Best Supporting.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, there's some actors, characters, celebrities who are so much themselves, and they're so extremely themselves that anytime you bring them in a movie, you carry the risk that their real life personality is going to bleed into a period piece. And I frankly didn't think Sarah Silverman could ever be in a movie where she's not Sarah Silverman.
Right.
And she's absolutely not Sarah Silverman. She just completely becomes this other character off that time. And I don't know if it's good direction or what it is, or maybe we have failed to understand her as a good actor, because maybe she gets cast in movies to play herself, and she's so good here.
Yeah. great performance by her.
And Carell.
Carell is always good.
Well, he's very easily dismissed as a comedic actor, and he's done roles, you know, Foxcatcher very famously a year or two ago, to try and dispense with that. And once again here, he's got the comedic tone because the character needed it, but I felt that he was a lot deeper in terms of portraying, you know, the seriousness. I mean, this guy was somebody whose reputation was, you know, I very much got the sense that he understood how much his reputation was at stake, and that came through Carell rather than the storytelling into anything else, because you know, there was more to the clown antics than you might appear to see on the surface. So he was really good, very, very believable here. And yes, yeah, you mentioned Elizabeth Shue, but the interaction between the two of them was very real. It was very tender but tense. And I think, gosh, is it too soon to call Carell out for yeah. another nod here? I mean, it's probably one of my favorite performances of the year, despite the fact that he is the smaller character in this movie.
And how easy it would have been for him to kind of just lapse into a caricature, right? Because the movie sees him, the plot sees him, the world saw him as a caricature. And to kind of build character around this caricature where you see him as more than that, I think is pretty remarkable. I also want to say that the production design for this movie was really super amazing. Like, it never felt like somebody has put together people in short dresses and said, there, you're in the 60s. You know, there's a lot of filming which has been done outside. You know, there's a lot of news clips. There's a lot of tennis. I don't know how they recreated the tennis stuff.
Amazing.
I don't know how they recreated
that. And
the
film grain, I mean, the cinematography was right on for the moment too.
So there's a lot to recommend. I mean, I thought this movie would be some cheesy kind of, you know, look, this happened 50 years ago. Wasn't it funny? Look, we're still like that. But it's, I think it's the script and the direction. So anyway.
Okay, let's wrap this one up. So Joe, you go first.
What's not to like here? I mean, I think this was a very interesting story. I think it was a terrific portrayal of a couple of very interesting historical characters. Like I said, I didn't actually know about this. So it was a ride from that perspective. The performances, Stone, Carell, everyone around them. You know, damn it. I mean, this is up there for me too. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. A little on the stingy side, but again, just a terrific movie.
Yeah, see.
Yeah, I was just telling a friend on Friday that there are three great biopic movies which are opening this Friday.
And they're in our podcast this
week.
They're
all in our podcast. And I think they're all remarkable in their own way. And I think this one stands up as well as the other two we've discussed today. There is nothing lazy about this movie. It's been put together with a lot of care. Everybody's worked very hard towards it, be it the clothing or the production design or the script or, you know, kind of scratching at what's underneath these characters in terms of their motivations. And for me, it just, any movie which strikes a chord in terms of it being so relevant right now when it's describing almost a comical event which happened, you know, 4.5 decades ago, has done its job. So an 8 out of 10 for me as well. I'm not giving it a 9 again because I didn't emotionally, you know, it didn't emotionally kind of rock me, but it's quite an accomplishment. So much more than the trailers will have you believe.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, rush me.
Gives it a 2 out of 10.
great production, great tennis, but this didn't ace it for me or win the match. 6 out of 10.
Boy, you're in a bad place. Time Warner Cable. We need you. All right. Until our next episode, Too Many Movies Again, Too Little Time. We did go a little long on that one, so hope
three big movies.
Hope you are still with us by the end of this all. Let us know what you think. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers, instagram.com/movierollers, of which we've been a little negligent lately, so we should Instagram some more.
I did take a picture of the nice cheese board that we had. I will post it right now.
You should put it on Movierollers Instagram account for sure. All right, until next time, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.